It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 42 degrees. A light rain is being driven through the foggy mist by a 21-mile-per-hour northerly wind that is gusting to 31. Out at the airport, they are clinging to 2.5 miles of visibility. Look for rain turning to snow tonight. North winds to 25, gusting to 30, turning to the northwest to 25, gusting to 35 tonight. Sunny skies on Wednesday. Coming up on the Midday Report, 2 days of memorial services are planned for Father Michael Oleksa, a well-known Russian Orthodox priest. Bethel's new training tower is destined to become a hub for firefighters all around the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. And Alaska Airlines is buying Hawaiian Airlines. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. The president of the International Committee of the Red Cross visited Gaza today. The Red Cross says it's seeking access to Israeli hostages held in Gaza and working to aid Gaza's civilians. NPR's Daniel Estrin reports from Tel Aviv.
The International Committee of the Red Cross facilitated the release of 109 hostages and 240 Palestinian detainees. ICRC Director General Robert Mardini told NPR the ICRC has asked but hasn't been granted access to visit the remaining hostages in Gaza. Same with Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails.
We haven't been able to visit since the 7th of October, but we hope to be able to visit again prisons in Israel.
ICRC President Mirjana Spoljarvic visiting Gaza said, quote, the level of human suffering is intolerable and that the Israeli military siege on Gaza makes an adequate humanitarian response impossible. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The United Nations annual conference on how to address climate change is underway in Dubai. Climate activist and former Vice President Al Gore says the Earth is running out of time.
We are approaching some very dangerous negative tipping points, like the Gulf Stream, like the flipping of the Amazon to a savanna, like the stability of the South Asian monsoon, the pace of the melting of the Greenland and Antarctic ice masses.
He said the oil and gas industry can't be trusted to report actual carbon pollution, accusing the president of this year's talks in Dubai of running one of the dirtiest oil companies out there. Sultan Al-Jaber said oil companies have stepped up in fighting climate change, but haven't done enough. A former U.S. ambassador to Bolivia has been arrested in Miami and charged with secretly acting as an agent of the Cuban government. The case against Victor Rocha was unsealed today in federal court in Florida. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports.
Rocha worked for the State Department for more than 2 decades, a career that included a stint on the National Security Council in the 1990s and as U.S. ambassador to Bolivia from 1999 to 2002. But prosecutors say that dating back to 1981, Rocha was also secretly serving as an agent of the Cuban government. Here's Attorney General Merrick Garland.
This action exposes one of the highest-reaching and longest-lasting infiltrations of the U.S. government by a foreign agent.
After the FBI received information about Rocha's alleged Cuban ties, an undercover FBI agent posing as a Cuban intelligence officer held 3 meetings with Rocha over the past year. During those meetings, prosecutors say Rocha talked about his work on Havana's behalf. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, just before the close, the Dow is down 41 points. This is NPR News. The Biden administration is urging Congress approve legislation for more money for Ukraine to fight the Russian invasion. Officials say the U.S. will run out of money to provide weapons and assistance by the end of the year. Office of Management and Budget Director Shalonda Young said that would kneecap Ukraine on the battlefield. There are new efforts to combat loneliness at a time when Gallup research finds about 1 in 4 adults say they're lonely. NPR's Allison Aubrey reports on Project Unlonely, an initiative aimed at using art and artistic expression to help people make social connections.
Dr. Jeremy Noble, a physician who started the initiative, says most people experience loneliness at some point in life.
The challenge isn't to avoid loneliness, but to see it as a signal. Just like thirst is a signal you need hydration, loneliness is a signal you need human connection.
Drawing a picture may seem like a solitary act, but it can be a bridge to connection and a way to express what's on your mind. Whether it's poetry, music, painting, dancing, knitting, or baking, Nobel says making things and beholding the works of others can reduce stress hormones and help relax us, helping to create a good environment to connect. Allison Aubrey, NPR News.
The music streaming service Spotify has announced plans to lay off 17% of its workforce after hiring many new people in 2020 and 2021. Spotify had started investing in podcasts and spent close to $1 billion on audio studios and celebrity hosts. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing a transformative approach to justice that is community-led, restorative, and racially just. Learn more at publicwelfare.org. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at macfound.org.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. 2 days of memorial services are planned this week for Father Michael Oleksa, a well-known Russian Orthodox priest who is probably one of the most traveled of Alaska clergy members. He served communities from Kodiak Island to western and southeast Alaska and across the Aleutian chain. He last served in Nanwalik near Homer, where he died last month at the age of 76. Sven Hawkinson grew up in Old Harbor on Kodiak Island, Father Oleksa's first assignment as a priest in Alaska. Hawkinson says he's known him since he was 5 years old and remembers hearing the word Supiak for the first time in his services. Hawkinson says that was the name the indigenous people of Kodiak Island once called themselves.
I want to say he wanted to make sure people understood our history, which is something that wasn't taught or wasn't spoken about.
Hawkinson said elders knew the word but no longer used it because most people had begun to think of themselves as Aleut, the Russian name for the natives they first encountered.
Aleut is a name that the Russians just called everybody from the Aleutians all the way up to the Prince William Sound.
Hawkinson said Oleksa's use of the word Supiak was healing for the community, and the priest's lessons in history made him curious about his own culture, which started him on his journey to become one of the first Alaska Native anthropologists. Hawkinson's sister, Phyllis Clough, says one of the priest's greatest gifts was as a teacher and storyteller.
He would explain everything where everyone could understand, because there was a lot of broken English back then, and he had a way, and his eyes lit up. When people would come to church, he would be so happy.
In the 1980s, Father Oleksa was known for his groundbreaking work as a cultural ambassador. He focused on the need for educators to understand and appreciate Alaskan Native culture so they could be more effective in the classroom and avoid cultural misunderstandings. A service will be held Monday afternoon in Anchorage at 3 o'clock at St. Innocent's Cathedral. Another service will be held on Tuesday morning starting at 10. Bethel's Fire Department has a new training facility, one that's designed to become a hub for training firefighters all over the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello walked through fire to take a look inside.
There are shipping containers stacked all over Bethel, but the three stacked containers on the edge of town aren't like any others. They're meant to be set on fire, and I'm getting ready to go inside and get a taste of what it's like to fight a fire inside a building. I'm with six other men going through training, and first things first, we have to gear up. There are three layers to protect from the heat and steam, thick gloves, boots, and a helmet. And I strap on a heavy tank. It looks like something you'd use for scuba diving. I also can't feel the frigid air against my face because of my mask, which means I won't feel the flames, which is comforting. So my senses are dull and limited. And now, it's time to go inside. That beep you're hearing is from what they call a pass alarm. It goes off whenever a firefighter doesn't move for 30 seconds. That way, if a firefighter falls through the floor or gets hurt, the alarm is basically a beacon for rescuers. There aren't any lights inside of these shipping containers, but Fire Chief Darren Soulsby says it's supposed to be dark in here.
Plus, it puts firefighters in difficult positions where they have to start using their mind. How am I going to get this person out?
They use a flamethrower attached to a propane tank. Once the fire is lit, it's like a pressure cooker. With the limited amount of oxygen I'm carrying, I can't take deep breaths. My face mask is covered in soot, so I can't see. But with all the burning wood, radio commands, spraying water, beasts bouncing around inside the steel container, it's a cacophony. It's hard to hear anything. Finally, we're done. All of us walk out of the shipping containers. There's ash everywhere mixing with the snow. It looks apocalyptic. This tower provides a controlled training facility for firefighters to learn in. Think of it as a fire lab.
Firemen today don't have that environment. They don't get houses like we used to. So this gives it a place where they can go every day and do the same training. It can make it the same every time, or we can change it up to teach whoever we need to.
Fire Captain Josh Kliegel currently works for the City of Twin Falls Fire Department, and he is here from Idaho to help train full-time and volunteer firefighters on the new system. This training facility is designed to be used for fires that start with ordinary materials like cloth, paper, or wood. And today, it wasn't just about learning the techniques of firefighting. It's about teaching these Bethel firefighters to teach other firefighters inside of this facility.
We are trying to teach them this system because it is one of the better fire training systems, because you can consistently repeat all the processes over and over.
That's Jeremy Hurst, a retired fire captain and the second trainer today. It's a demanding work environment.
This represents about 20% of modern homes' fuel loads, so it keeps it safe. We're not damaging, nobody's getting hurt. We're not damaging our equipment. We're not damaging the building. This building will last as long as they want it to if they keep up with minor maintenance on it. But they get to preview into a safe environment of what they're going to see in the wild.
Bethel's fire department leadership says this facility is both a point of pride and will help them recruit and train more people, and help set up a regional firefighting training center for departments across the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. At the new fire tower in Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
Bristol Bay, a region of less than 8,000 year-round residents, saw three overdoses in less than 1 week last summer. They have long contended with drug trafficking, especially substances like meth and heroin. But as fentanyl enters small communities, families and friends are rapidly losing loved ones. Members of the state's Department of Public Safety came to Dillingham last month. KDLG's Christina McDermott reports on the problem scope and what's being done.
Between the years 2021 and 2022, Alaska's overdose deaths nearly doubled from the previous five-year average.
We do know that we have a drug problem in the state of Alaska.
James Cockrell is the commissioner for Alaska's Department of Public Safety.
and specifically in rural Alaska, and Dillingham, Togiak area, and King Salmon is one of the areas that have a high propensity of drugs and drug overdoses.
Cockrell says rural Alaska is a target for dealers because they reap huge profits in small communities. One dose of fentanyl can cost several times what it would in the lower 48. In November, Cockrell met with community officials in Dillingham to discuss the scope of the problem. The city also held a town hall so the wider community could participate. Dillingham Mayor Alice Ruby says that at both meetings, community members raised concerns about the region's drug use.
It was pretty evident by, you know, some of the agencies talking about issues they've been dealing with, the housing authority and even our local police force and others, that it's a growing problem.
Fentanyl is now the most common drug involved in overdose deaths nationwide, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. About 2 milligrams can kill you. That's the width of just 2 pennies stacked together. The Department of Public Safety recently launched an app to combat the problem called AK Tips, where community members could send anonymous information to officers working on drug cases from all over the state. Officers can then alert local authorities.
The more information that we can get, the quicker information, the more detailed information we get, the more likelihood law enforcement, whether it's the Dillingham Police Department, King Salmon Police Department, Togiak, or the Alaska State Troopers, we have a much higher probability of solving that case.
The department's interim head of public safety, Joel Ward, says another focus is prevention in small communities. That's where the Village Public Safety Officer Program comes into play.
The VPSO program really is the state's effort to have a proactive local presence. And with that presence, they establish relationships and rapport and can recognize crime or accidents maybe before they become accidents or crimes.
Ward says Village public safety officers not only have a strong understanding of local dynamics, but they can provide a positive role model and help reduce the demand for drugs in small communities.
Looking at the families, the children, and others that get sucked into the supply side and try to create, you know, a different role model that can help people make better choices.
But there are still hurdles. Although the state has increased public safety funding in recent years, the agency is still understaffed. Last month, Cockrell says 70 positions were open in the troopers alone. Cockrell says that limits their capacity to staff a drug officer in rural areas like Dillingham. The department had staffed a drug investigator in Dillingham for several years, but that position is currently vacant. Cockrell says that filling the role is one of his priorities going forward. In Dillingham, I'm Christina McDermott.
Alaska Airlines is buying Hawaiian Airlines. The companies announced the proposed merger yesterday in a press conference in Honolulu. As KUAC's Robin reports, Alaska is forking out $1.9 billion.
The combined organization will be based in Seattle under the leadership of Alaska Airlines CEO Ben Minicucci.
As the two airlines rooted in the 49th and 50th state, both of which are uniquely reliant upon air travel, Alaska and Hawaiian share a great deal in common.
At the press conference, he called out the friendship between the late Senators Daniel Inouye and Ted Stevens and the political bonds shared by the Native Hawaiian and Alaska Native groups. He said the airlines share a common corporate culture.
We are aligned in the way we do business, the way in which we treat our employees, our engagement, and support to the communities we serve.
Hawaiian Airlines serves about half the inter-island traffic in the state. Peter Ingram, Hawaiian Airlines president and CEO, says Honolulu will soon be an Alaska Airlines hub.
This is the biggest announcement in Hawaiian's history, and that's saying a lot for a 94-year-old company. Our shared similarities, our people, and our values run deep. And that is what will ensure a prosperous future for both brands.
The CEOs of each company say it will be 12 to 18 months before customers notice any changes, with schedules, frequent flyer programs, and airline names staying the same. Minicucci promises the Hawaiian name will stay even after the merger is complete.
The Hawaiian Airlines brand will remain, not only in name, but also in the distinctive branding that appears on the Hawaiian airplanes at airports and other locations, and in the experience enjoyed by Hawaiian Airlines passengers, partners, employees, and the communities it serves.
It's very unusual in the industry for a purchased airline to keep its name and branding.
It's virtually unheard of.
Hawaii News Now business reporter Howard Dykus compared this promise to a combined tail design when United merged with Continental in 2010.
This is more than a compromise. This is a recognition that the Hawaiian brand name has value.
With the deal, Alaska is picking up $1 billion in equity and $900 million in debt with Hawaiian Airlines. Minakuchi said conversations on a price began early this year. The price translates to $18 per share, which is more than four times what Hawaiian Airlines had been trading at $4 per share.
Today we have a deal because we agreed on a price that was fair, that valued the company at the right place. And airline shares have been very volatile, and so we took that aside to say, what is the company actually valued at? The price that we offered was fair.
Alaska is bigger, with about 23,000 employees compared to Hawaiian's 7,000. Ingram said job protection was part of the deal.
It was important to us at Hawaiian to ensure that Alaska will maintain and grow union jobs in Hawaii, retain flight crew bases and operations in Hawaii, with Honolulu becoming a strategic hub for the combined company.
Alaska has 300 planes now, many Boeing 737s, and will get 60 more aircraft, many of which are wide-body jets for international flights. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The conservation group, the Wilderness Society, has changed its position and now supports a bill that would create five new Alaska Native corporations in southeast Alaska. It has historically opposed the creation of the new corporations. The Unrecognized Southeast Alaska Native Communities Recognition and Compensation Act would create for-profit Native corporations for five Native communities left out of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. That act transferred almost $1 billion and title to 44 million acres to Native corporations to make profits and issue dividends to Native shareholders. The reasons for the communities in Southeast being left out of the 1971 Settlement Act are unclear. The Southeast Alaska Conservation Council came out last year in support of the bill, and while the Sierra Club and Earth Justice, two large national environmental organizations, have changed their opposition to a neutral stance. The Society said in a statement that some of the Native communities affected by this issue have continued to partner with the Society, quote, including in defense of roadless rural protections in the Tongass National Forest. The Wilderness Society has more than 1 million members and supporters, according to its website.
Alaska Airlines wants to buy Hawaiian Airlines. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The deal is said to be worth nearly $2 billion. If regulators approve it, the two airlines would keep their identities, but together would control more than 50% of flights to Hawaii. Swiss drug maker Roche is buying San Francisco area biotech startup Carmot Therapeutics for more than $2.5 billion. Carmot is developing obesity drugs similar to Ozempic and Trulicity, which doctors have prescribed off-label for weight loss. There's been a race to acquire companies working on such drugs. Spotify is cutting 17% of its workforce, its third layoff this year. The streaming service recently returned to profitability, but has been cutting expenses. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the fourth day of December, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:33. It will set again promptly at 4:26, giving us 6 hours and 53 minutes of glorious daylight. A loss of 2 minutes and 31 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 48 degrees. That was set in 1947. And our record low was 0 degrees, set in Chile, 1971. Currently 42 degrees, light rain, foggy, misty, and breezy. North winds to 21 at the airport right now, gusting to 31, and they remain down to 2.5 miles of visibility. Look for rain for the rest of the day, turning to snow this evening, at least until 9 p.m. North winds to 25 today, gusting to 30, and it's been blowing here at the station. For tonight, look for cloudy skies, steady temperatures around 35 overnight tonight, with northwest winds around 25, gusting to 35. Snow is likely in the evening, but no accumulation is expected. For tomorrow, 20% chance of snow before noon, mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 36, and northwest winds 25 to 35. Looking at our tides, we have a low tide coming up in just a couple of minutes here on the east side. That will happen at 12:32 this afternoon and be 4.2 feet, followed by a high tide at 6:14 this evening of 6.7 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:18 this afternoon and be 6.5 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 6:46 p.m. of 10.3 feet. Mariners, be aware, we do have a gale warning for tonight and Tuesday for Marbot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. North wind to 30 knots today on our east side and seas to 12 feet. For tonight, north 35, seas to 13 feet. And for tomorrow, northwest 35, seas to 12 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for today and tomorrow. North winds to 35 knots today, becoming northwest 30 tonight. 9-foot seas coming down to 7 feet, but look for a freezing spray tonight in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, northwest 35, seas to 9 feet, and freezing spray. Here are some of the upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On December 5th, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having its regular meeting at the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. On December 7th, the Parks and Recreation Committee will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room. That's number 121 at 11 a.m. on the 7th. On December 11th, the Health Facilities Advisory Board will be having its regular meeting in the Providence Barometer Conference Room at 3 p.m. Well, fun things are happening on Wednesdays. It's the December program schedule of fun. That's Families Understanding Nature, which is a program put on by the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center for stories, crafts, and activities about nature and wildlife. That's happening Wednesdays from 10:30 to 11:15 a.m. at the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center downtown. And this coming Wednesday, December 6th, they'll be talking about bald eagles and having activities and all kinds of fun things. December 13th, they will be talking about Aleutic visors. And remember, there will be no fun on the 20th or the 27th. Senior citizens of Kodiak is in need of paper bags again. Please make sure they are not torn or soiled, and you can drop them off at the Senior Center between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Well, it's coming up. Mark your calendars next Sunday. It's the Isle Bells 13th Annual Holiday Bells Concert. It's going on all the way from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. next Sunday. And it's featuring Hazel de los Santos, happening at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium, of course. And you can purchase your tickets at the KodiakArts.org website, the Kodiak Arts Council website. Also, between the December 8th and 10th, it's Bethlehem Experience. It's an indoor event at the Kodiak Baptist Mission. That's happening from 5 to 7 p.m. on December 8th and 9th, and 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. on December 10th. Experience the sights, sounds, smells, and taste of the city of Bethlehem at the time of Jesus' birth this Christmas season. The entire family will want to attend with plenty for everyone to do and see. Again, that's December 8th through 10th at the Kodiak Baptist Mission. On the 8th and 9th is 5 to 7 p.m., and on the 10th is 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Free admittance. And it's coming up. Get ready to join your friends and neighbors on Saturday, December 16th, to watch the Kodiak Fleet, decorated with holiday lights, parade through the Near Island Channel. Boats will rendezvous at 6 p.m. north of the Near Island Bridge and proceed south through the channel to Pier 2 and the Outer Harbor. Should high winds prevent a parade, don't forget to walk the floats to see the decorated boats in both St. Paul Harbor and St. Herman Harbor. They're still a lot of fun to look at. For more information, call the Kodiak Maritime Museum at 486-0384.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.